Presenter this morning is Emily Lynch, and she will be speaking on Comprehending School Bullying and the Current Interventions in Indiana. Welcome.
Again, my name is Emily Lynch, and I wanted to thank you all so much for coming and listening to all of these presentations, because I think all of us realize how important it is to prevent violence in the schools. So again, my presentation is Comprehending School Bullying and Current Interventions, Research for Clarion Health of Indiana. And Clarion Health is a large hospital network within central Indiana. I would like to also announce that one of my other colleagues is here today in the audience, Jennifer Alia. She is an MPH candidate as well. I am too. And we are affiliated with Indiana University School of Medicine Department of Public Health. And here is the list of the rest of our contributing authors as well. And of course, we have no relationships to disclose. I'd also like to announce that the slides in this will be recorded on the, move this up a little bit here, there we go, will be recorded and be on the Essentials e-learning as well, so you can get those there. So how did we get involved with Clarion Health of Indiana? My colleagues and I had the wonderful opportunity to partner with Clarion Health because they wanted to really understand and grasp what bullying was, who was involved, and really what the problem was, so that they might be able to take our research and provide more community resources for schools and communities on bullying. And so this presentation is the culmination of our literature review that we did for them. So we will be talking about definitions and types of bullying, as well as the categories of involvement within a bullying scenario. We can also talk about types of bullies, as well as the outcomes of bullying events and best practices in bullying prevention. So what is bullying? According to the American Psychological Association, bullying is an aggressive behavior that is intended to cause harm or distress. It occurs repeatedly over time, and it occurs in a relationship in which there is an imbalance of power and strength. Within our literature review, we were able to subcategorize the types of bullying into four categories. Our first one would be verbal abuse, and this includes anything from threats, intimidation, humiliation, name-calling, gossip, and rumors. That's somewhat of a passive type of verbal abuse, but it does count as that, as well as sexual comments. We also have social isolation, which includes segregation of certain people from any type of group activities, such as, you know, playing in the gym, picking teams, eating in the cafeteria together, and things like that. We actually have physical abuse, too, and that includes, of course, physical contact, actual punching, slapping, pinching, kicking, anything like that. But also physical intimidation, which includes, you know, blocking pathways or, you know, putting your arm, in a doorway or something like that. The use of weapons was also put under physical abuse, as well as unwanted sexual contact. And I think one of the most novel ones that we came across was, and one that we're all becoming very aware of, is cyber or electronic bullying, which includes Facebook, MySpace, online chat rooms, emails, cell phones, iPhones, Blackberries, whatever. So, and what we found is that cyber and electronic bullying tend to be a little bit more vicious, because, you know, it goes through the avenue of MySpace or Facebook, and there is that computer screen, you know, blocking your identity. So let's talk about the categories of involvement within a bullying scenario. Overall, the literature show that there, again, were four subcategories. We have our peer bully, who displays aggressive behavior, but is not a victim of bullying him or herself. We have the peer victim, which again is the opposite of that, who displays submissive behavior and does not bully others. And then our third category, we have the bully victim or the aggressive victim. This is a person who is bullied and bullies others. When they are bullied, they are more reactive, to these bullying events than the peer victims. And they display submissiveness, but also delayed aggressive behavior. And some severe cases of this we can think of with the Columbine shootings and any other school shootings that have occurred in our history so far. And then we have the uninvolved, which very much we think of as the crowd maybe behind looking at this bullying event. They may still witness bullying events and develop fear and intimidation, and many times within research they're used as the control groups. We were very fortunate to talk to a woman in Indiana. Her name is Karen Duncan, who had one of her own programs that she authored called Values in Action. And she actually went on to take our peer bully category and break that bully down into 7 subcategories. So this is her novel subcategorization of what bullies are, and they include the physically aggressive bully, the anger-impaired bully, the victim bully, the emotional bully, the status bully, the developmental bully, and the attention-seeking bully. And basically what this subcategorization does is gives us the unique opportunity to develop any type of interventions or counseling for these bullies based on this subcategorization, so we can tailor those interventions to them. And this is purely based on Karen Duncan's theories. So let's talk about the outcomes of bullying. And we're going to go back to our 4 categories that we talked about before. Our peer bullies, they tend to have increased participation in criminal activity later in life, including shoplifting, vandalism, and also domestic and sexual abuse. They usually are the perpetrators of that. They also might have possible increases in depression and suicidal thoughts. And this is very much debated on, especially if I'm going to go back one slide. With Karen Duncan, she might very well say, well, yes, there would be increased rates of depression and suicidal ideation, maybe for the emotional bully or the victim bully, but not so much for the status bully, because that's somebody that, you know, might have actual, you know, increased self-esteem from bullying. Unfortunately, our list for the peer victims is longer. They tend to have increased physical and psychological distress, social anxiety, and low self-esteem. They suffer insomnia and depression, as well as a variety of physical ailments, suicidal ideation, a decline in academic performance and increased absenteeism, and psychological effects that may last into their adulthood as well. Outcomes for our bully victim group, and again, this is our group that we're talking about, is bullied, and also bullies others. They have the aggressive, violent, and delinquent habits displayed by peer bullies, but they also have the low self-esteem, depression, and social isolation associated with peer victims. They have higher levels of psychological disorders, mental and psychological disorders than peer bullies or peer victims, and that is why our colleagues identified them as a priority group for intervention. So what are the practices out there right now that combat bullying? And obviously I think that we've heard a lot from our other presentations today about the research that is out there and developing programs that can combat bullying. In our literature review, we came up with 2 approaches, really. The curriculum-based approach, which has to do with in-class instruction. So this is the teacher actually teaching, you know, a specific fixed duration of time, a lesson that, you know, is, you know, maybe on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, maybe for the fall semester. But then we have our multidisciplinary, comprehensive, or whole school approaches. And basically, this is a very interesting idea to combat bullying, because it targets the individual classroom and school levels for intervention. And because of that, this socio-ecological approach to it really alters the overall school environment. So the student, the teacher, the staff, including cafeteria workers, janitors, bus drivers, as well as the parents and guardians are also involved with this, and this is ongoing. So in our literature review, overwhelmingly, the whole school approaches are favored. That's what we have found. Honestly, in my opinion, it's because they use, you know, the socio-ecological model that is followed, as well as it incorporates all levels of prevention, including primary, secondary, and tertiary. And some examples of that would be for primary, teachers will teach children that bullying is not acceptable. And this changes the children's overall attitudes towards treating their fellow classmates. It increases the presence of adults in places where bullying could occur, such as hallways or restrooms or buses. So therefore, the overall school social norms are actually changed to not accept bullying. And again, that's, you know, the overall school environment that we're talking about. Secondary prevention, we have teachers and staff are actually trained to be more vigilant of bullies in the act. And for tertiary prevention, that would be counseling with bullies, victims, as well as their parents and guardians. Within our literature review, we pinpointed one prevention program. It is a whole school approach program, and it's called the OVEAS Bullying Prevention Program. It incorporates all of the best practices, including targeting the different levels of the school, as well as incorporating primary, secondary, and tertiary levels of prevention. It provides ongoing consultation, as well as startup training, and it is evidence-based. It has been shown that there's been a 50% reduction in bullying incidents over a two-year implementation period. I believe this is back in the 80s when this was shown. It is identified as a model program or a blueprint program by a number of national organizations, including the Center for Study and Prevention of Violence, the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA, the U.S. Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, and the U.S. Surgeon General has also endorsed it. The cons that we found to this, and this was based on an interview that we did with the Indiana Department of Education, was the cost. At least in Indiana, what we found was that the cost to implement these programs within all of our schools in Indiana was a big hindrance to the schools. So in wrapping up, basically, you know, what we found was bullying in schools is a public health problem. It might be a novel one and one on the rise, but it is a public health problem. It is a form of youth violence that calls for a behavioral intervention to prevent injury. And based on an interview that I conducted with a woman from a domestic abuse shelter, she said that, you know, bullying can start as early as preschool. It's about learning social skills early on and respecting one another. And bullying can be considered the first precursor to more evolved forms of violence, such as youth violence, dating violence, intimate partner abuse, as well as gang violence. So there are our references. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask all of our presenters to come up, and we've got about 10 minutes for questions. While they're coming up, I'd just like to point out to you that School Health Education and Services thanks each and every one of you for coming today. In the back, we have some of our sponsored programs. You can pick up a handout, and I'll also leave a sheet if you'd like some more information about how to get involved with School Health Education and Services. That would be wonderful. So please address your questions. Yes.
James and Stephen from Oklahoma. Under diversity training, it really stood out that you're not, I didn't see a mention of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender questioning students. And so I was wondering, if they're not included, why not? If they are included, but just didn't get onto the slide, is there any trouble with getting it implemented?
There's some degree of that. Most of the schools we're working with are elementary schools. In the true meaning of prevention, I think Emily mentioned that bullying can start at kindergarten level, and we realize that. And where we know most of the violence occurs is at middle school and high school level. So our idea is to get to the kids as early as possible. Some of those concepts with gay, lesbian, transgendered issues, we address loosely, not in specific terms, but more in concrete terms that the kids at that level can understand. Now, we're trying some programs in the middle schools. That terminology is being used more. But at the elementary level, concrete ideas that kids that look different, behave different, dress different than you, including them.
I'd like to add, too, that when we did our interview with the Department of Education, that was one of the things that the woman, Clarissa Snapp was her name, actually said, is that, you know, that she wanted us to do more research and to include the fact that, you know, not only gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people were targeted as, more as victims, but also handicapped people and special education students and things like that. Also, you know, when you get up into the higher grade levels, we're definitely targeted as bullies, or victims of bullies.
So. Questions? Yes, ma'am, in the back.
Thank you all to the presenters. It was really interesting, kind of broad spectrum of the topic. And I'm just curious for the Oklahoma folks if you've ever considered looking, doing your work with education, departments of education, as opposed to psych. I know it's kind of easier to get in if you're in the psych department because they're all doing all kinds of weird research, but I just think, just especially in light of the last two presentations, looking at the school environment and really embedding these practices into the classroom, that it might kind of give you a bang for the buck since the educators are actually going to be in the classroom.
Sure. I'm glad you asked that because I'm a licensed psychologist, so that's my background, so it's much easier for me to go to psychology departments and they buy into my model. Now, at University of Central Oklahoma, which is in Edmond, we actually do have some education majors and teachers that are doing their practicum work that are training with us. We also, at the University Health Sciences Center, have some nursing students that are training with us. So it indeed is multidisciplinary. However, just based on my background, the majority of the students are psychology or counseling.
And along with that, sorry,
no.
We have talked with at OU, talked with departments of education and elementary education students to work with us. It's just kind of a process to actually get them to acknowledge it as a class. And so,
because our class goes down as a research practicum or applied research practicum, in some cases an independent study, but they get course credit at their respective universities. So it's up to the university to title the course whatever they want. We're training them, but they get the course credit. And so some of the education schools that we've dealt with, it's a little more problematic. Where do you fit that into the degree plan?
I do apologize for coming late in the session. I just want to ask a question. If it's already been addressed, you let me know. Did you study, take into consideration the A, the gender bias, and B, the social kind of bias, and C, are the terms well-defined, uniform across many of the educational systems?
Who's that?
Who would like to address this?
Did you have someone in particular that you wanted to?
Anybody who can relate to.
And you mentioned gender, social, what was the third?
And the terms, the bullying, is it kind of well defined in schools that a child would know what constitutes a bully?
Well, I can definitely say that with our experience with Clarion Health in Central Indiana and doing interviews with the Department of Education and also doing some interviews with the local public schools within Indianapolis, that bullying was not well known, not really well known by assistant principals, principals, teachers. Teachers knew that it was there, but they didn't, I mean, there was no set definition and there was not really a set strategy to deal with that. So I can say that, at least for bullying.
And if you're talking about general violence, just from being in the literature, how, and qualitative stuff, how students define violence is very, very broad. So I want to say that we in public health and criminology tend to define violence, you know, physical, emotional. We have our little categories. When you ask students what violence is, it includes cursing, it includes negative thoughts, negative actions. So students have the severe forms of violence that they're not automatically what they think of. They more talk about the interrelational aspects of violence and more notions of respect and disrespect as a form of violence. So when you're doing kind of bullying slash violence prevention, I agree with the, you know, starting at the young age, and it's more the interrelational skills, which then of course create an environment that reflects those.
I definitely wanted to add on too that once we start getting into the higher levels of grades, 7th, 8th, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, that gender bias does play a role in bullying, and I think that bullying more accurately evolves into dating violence and things like that. And so that once we get into dating violence, then yes, gender equality is something that definitely has to be integrated within the interventions at those grade levels.
Yes. First, I want to thank you all for the wonderful session this morning. And my question is for Sarah, and I also was really fascinated with the work that you're doing. Two questions. Is one a little bit about the focus groups that you conducted, and whether two focus groups?
There are two different groups of participants. It's actually, the concept mapping is actually Bill Trocum up at Cornell kind of came up with the system and the notion of using the statistical software with it. So he kind of has and other researchers have a set order. The first session is kind of a brainstorm, so we use group process aspects of brainstorming, but they just really are generating statements. So unlike a focus group where you're getting necessarily, and this is a limitation, where you're not getting the full context potentially around what the statement is, you can infer that with what else it's grouped with and how students label that grouping, but we don't really explore any of the statements in depth. But on a positive side, focus groups, traditionally, you get your information, we go back and put it in Atlas TI and we kind of spend hours looking at the screen. Well, in concept mapping, we take their statements, we create the map, and we take that back to the students and say, you interpret it. So, as a PhD student, it was wonderful because I'm like, you interpreted that for me, great, thank you.
The classroom
thing,
are you dealing with
a
classroom
I should have mentioned that. Each group had about 15 students in it. It's kind of just a notion of the size. I had a research assistant with me, but kind of a size that was manageable. And I didn't want anyone from the school environment to be in this situation. So it was just the two of us with the students. We were fortunate, the students and myself got to go back and present this information to their schools, which was wonderful to have the school faculty there.
It's an interesting method, and I think, you know, to learn more about how to choose the students, and I'm sure you'll have to do that for your dissertation.
Yeah, and come talk with me afterwards.
My second question is, I wonder how your results correspond to some of the safety climate scales that have already been developed that touch upon many of the themes or dimensions, I don't know what the terminology is, Is that correct?
Yeah.
Mentions that I wonder because, you know, there are existing scales and, you know, they've been shown to be pretty valid and reliable. I wonder if you utilize that in that setting, how those data might correspond.
So I was and am going to look at that relationship. So we do a lot of school connectedness. What's interesting in the school violence literature is that criminologists, psychologists, sociologists, public health people all kind of are involved in it. And so what you end up with is a lot of similar notions that are called different things. And so the process of combing the literature and pulling all of these kind of core ideas out, from what I can see, the really novel ones are like the involvement of the neighborhood, also this notion of let's not forget the individual and how the individual interacts, relationships with school security I don't think are talked about a lot.
Some of that in some, I think also the utility of what you're doing could lead to the development of scales, because it takes a lot of time and effort to conduct, you know, these single sessions with a small group of people, but, you know, whether or not that can lead to development of new skills or refinement of skills would really be beneficial to the larger.
No, and that's definitely, you know, I think that's the last side of my dissertation presentation is, you know, your future steps and kind of looking at it, you know, but it'd be important to not to go outside of Baltimore, especially with the history of violence, to go into other areas and kind of see. And it's fascinating in and of itself. Are all school environments the same? Well, we know they're not, but can they be boiled down at least into the somewhat similar aspects?
Thank you. Unfortunately, we are just about out of time, so I definitely, on behalf of School Health Education Services, want to thank all of our presenters for a wonderful program this morning. Thank you all for coming. Perhaps if you have a question, our presenters will stick around. I encourage all of you to submit abstracts for next year's meeting, which will take place in Philadelphia. The call for abstracts comes out in December. School Health Education and Services would love to see you on our programs. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you all very much. Oh, it was great. I thought it was great.
So how did you get roped in for presiding? You said you were a middle school teacher. So
I've been at commissions. So
okay.
Oh,
that's
good.
How you do it. Thank you
for coming. Thank you very much.